Good evening, and welcome to the final broadcast of In Other Words on Montana Public Radio. I'm Ann Zaldapetri, and I've been lucky enough to be the coordinator for In Other Words for the last year and to have worked on the show for the last 2 years. But the show has a very long history that started way before my involvement. In fact, 30 years of history. We are, in this, our final show, going to treat it like a party, a big celebration of the fact that we were able to have a volunteer-driven show by, about, and for women for 30 years. And we have a huge number of people coming. Well, not a huge number, but like about seven. And we have some of the early contributors to In Other Words, some of the founding mothers, I like to think of them as. We also have some of the current producers. Beth Judy joins us, Amy Sillenberg, Briney Schwan. We also have in the studio Margaret, and running the board and engineering for us is, as always, the show favorite and extraordinarily helpful human being, Beth Ann Osteen. And then we also are lucky enough to have Lynn Smith, and we will have Terry Kendrick and possibly Christine Kaufman joining us later by telephone from Helena. So I guess I'm going to turn it over to the women that are in the other room to start talking about the beginnings of In Other Words and how this wonderful thing that's ending tonight got started.
Anne, this is Beth Judy, and I do have to just interrupt and say that there is a bottle of champagne here that I am going to work on the cork of, so there may be a pop as we begin.
That is fantastic and contributes much to the party atmosphere.
That's right. That's right. So please proceed, everyone.
So I believe we were going to begin the discussion by talking about some of the beginnings of In Other Words. From what I've been hearing over the last 2 years, and especially tonight, it began with another show, Feminist Forum. And I think, Margaret, you have some history on that. Is that right?
I just have a small amount of history. This was quite a long time ago because I remember listening to it on the radio when I was pretty young. So I'm thinking like maybe started in the late 70s and then into the 80s. Feminist Forum, and then it came something else, which you were a part of, Lynn.
Yes.
My
now it's really begun.
Now the party has begun.
So my memories of the very beginning are that I somehow heard about Rita DeAndrea had started working on a program basically continuing in the tradition of Feminist Forum, and she had called it In Other Words. You know, my sense of that was that it was women speaking for themselves about what was important to them, their issues not being interpreted by other folks. She was here for some months, maybe, I can't remember, a year or so, and she was going to leave. And it seemed to me that this program must continue. So I sat in with her and tried to learn how to work on the radio, to produce radio from that perspective. You know, I remember that Christine Kaufman then joined me and we basically co-hosted it, and then Terry Kendrick got involved. And over these years, so many women have been involved, and we've interviewed so many other women who were either coming through or in the community, and all the projects that were being worked on. I mean, there was just so much going on that the community needed to know about in terms of what women were doing.
Lynn, will you talk about how you ran those shows? When you say you co-hosted, were they live programs that people sort of sat around microphones and talked, or were they produced? What did that look like?
They were live. And I remember spending a lot of time. We had weekly meetings, and we would talk about the kinds of shows that we were interested in doing and get suggestions from each other, and then we would do them live. And I remember I was a very nervous interviewer. I finally realized that unless I could learn to be calm, I couldn't, you know, I would make the person I was interviewing nervous. And so people learned, they got a lot better at doing radio. And a lot of the idea behind it, too, was to interview women who were working on all kinds of projects in the community and helping them get comfortable being on the radio so that they could develop some skills with media.
Do you remember who some of those early interviews were with? And do you remember any of the content? I know I'm
asking for... Oh, I have a whole box of tapes at home, to tell you the truth. But, you know, I just remember that I was associated with WORD, Women's Opportunity and Resource Development. And so I often was interviewing women who were working on various projects at WORD. But I also remember there would be women cycling through the community giving a talk from other parts of the world. And we would interview them just because we wanted to ask questions in a more particular vein about women's issues in their countries and their experiences here and things like that. So it was a mix of local and very much beyond local, you know. So.
And I'm just curious, this is Bryony Schwan, when did Janet Scott start helping out? Because she was a producer for a very long time, too.
You know, it's interesting. My memory is that as Christine moved to Helena and got involved with legislative issues and as a legislator and Terry moved on too, that I was looking for someone who would be interested in basically taking on a major role with a radio station, and Janet just really stepped into it and did a lot of interviews. Do you remember?
I would say it was about 96 or so, because I know I started in 95, and she actually emailed us, and I would love to read this at some point.
Oh, good.
Some great words from her. She's reminding me that I taught her how to degauss the old reels of tape. Beth Ann is laughing over there. This is back when there were metal reels of tape, and you had to erase them on a machine that you ran. And it was like when your credit card gets erased. It was maybe it was a magnetic thing.
Mm-hmm. It sounded like this.
Yeah, it was a cool, and the metal reel shook, and then it was all clean. It was how you blanked them.
And we spent a lot of time splicing tape when we were
editing. That's what I was going to say.
It took a ton of time.
Yeah,
you know.
It did.
I think that's the thing that people don't think about. The technology has changed so much since we started the show, and I remember how many hours it would take sitting in here at night, and you'd have this skinny tape and you'd have to wind it back and forth and you'd have somebody's voice going, and you'd have to try and figure out where you wanted to exactly splice it. And then sometimes you'd splice it just not quite right.
Yes.
And then you'd be having to try and stick back a piece that was about a quarter of a,
it's so much better now, isn't it?
It is so much better. But the thing is that it took so...
I
remember that it was a lot of time. It would take, I remember being in the studio till the wee hours of the morning trying to get a show ready because it took so much time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the technology has really changed.
And the thing was, too, is you'd have that tiny little piece of tape, and they were always on the slant. You cut on the slant, and you'd have it, and it would be like a breath that you needed to insert. And then you would drop it on the floor.
Now there's just the computer, and you do the Control Z, and you just get it right back again, and splice it back together. But it's still amazing to me, this is Amy, how long it takes to put a show together in a way that you feel really good about. It's hours and hours and hours for a one-hour show.
It is hours.
So when you think of all those years and all those hours,
unpaid hours,
a contribution that in other words has made, you know, to KOFM in terms of women's programming is profound.
And I just want to throw in, this is just coming from me, this is Beth Ann, a giant thank you, and it's rather simplistic to say it now, and to say it towards just the people who are here, and hopefully some of the people who are listening who've been involved, but it is this gigantic community volunteer effort to put first a half an hour and then an hour of programming on the air every week. I don't think you guys have heard thank you nearly enough.
Oh. Well, thanks,
thank
Beth Ann.
Thanks,
Beth
Ann.
Yeah,
well, Amy, didn't you say the last show you did took 20 hours?
Not the last show, but one of my shows I've done. And some of that's because I'm pretty new to radio. And it was funny, Lynn, listening to why you described how it got started. Those words are exactly what Beth Judy told me when she started interviewing me and then kept kind of bringing me along until I started interviewing other people. But it was the same idea of just getting women comfortable with media. I mean, I'm still pretty new to radio, so I think it takes me maybe a little longer. But I have spent 20 hours for a one-hour show.
And I still spend a lot of time. I mean, I have. This kind of brings up what Janet Scott wrote us on email. She said, in other words, there's Teddy.
There's Teddy.
In other words, indefatigable, outstanding, outrageous women, that's what she says it stands for, IOW, was great fun for me. I was really dubious when Judy and Lynn Smith asked me to get involved with the show, told them I'd do the techie stuff only. Still can picture me demonstrating to her how to degauss the old reels of tape with a swoop of grace and panache. The chance to talk with fascinating women and men too seduced me pretty fast. I ended up interviewing people I'd really admired but never would have met otherwise. And the monthly get-togethers with other IOWers, hearing what everyone was up to, was a treat too. Quite an impressive feat to keep a volunteer radio show going for all these years. Many thanks to all who keep it on the air. Do you have plans for using other media to keep up the spirit?
Good. Yeah.
We'll talk about our plans a little bit maybe towards the end of the show. So, you know, I just want to say again, this is Bryony Schwan, that, you know, I'm really very sad that the show is ending. I realized, Beth, that I must have started around the same time as you, because it was when we got Women's Voices for the Earth going, and that was founded in late 1994, and so I think it was probably 95 that I started to get involved with, in other words. And I just think that we couldn't have done the work that we did without this show, because it was incredibly important show to be able to, as we've discussed, bring different women's perspectives. And the issues that we worked on were just issues that were very difficult to get into the mainstream media. And I think a lot of the women that we interviewed, again, were very much marginalized. And so having their voices on the air was incredibly important. And I still, you know, while I think things are better, we're not there yet. I mean, women still play a minority role in the media. Mm-hmm. Women's voices, you know, women still are in a minority in terms of leadership in Congress. Things are vastly improved, but we still got a long way to go. And so I do really worry now about what's going to happen to women's voices, particularly in this state, now that we no longer have a show.
Bryony, what's an example of an issue that you covered when we've got started, Women's Voices for the Earth? Are there any issues or people that you interviewed at the early
stages? Man, I was so lucky to interview so many amazing women, not just here, but nationally. And it was always thanks to Beth Ann Arstein for doing all the telephone engineering with some of the women that we interviewed. But I think one of the issues that really was important was breast cancer, for example. We all know about the whole pinking issue around breast cancer, but there are really ugly politics behind breast cancer, and the fact that there are a lot of chemical companies and other companies behind the mammography industry. There are a lot of companies that made money essentially from selling poisons in one shape or another, mm-hmm. that were also facading as supporting breast cancer. And also a lot of most of the research money at that time, and still it's a little bit better about now, but not a whole lot. A lot of the money for research was being put into finding a cure, and very little was ever talked about prevention. Or the links between breast cancer and the environment. And so those were the kinds of issues that we were able to get on the air, because it was very difficult to get that out in mainstream media.
Yeah. Another piece of, in other words, that was really important was the WINGS. We regularly had WINGS, which is the Women's International News Gathering Service, pieces on, in other words. So that was news about what women were doing all over the world. So we subscribed to and supported their efforts to keep that kind of programming on the air.
Yeah, that was wonderful to hear from women in Australia, women in Africa, Mexico, I mean, just all over the world. And to remember that everyone is working towards a better world all over.
Shall we go ahead and just do that piece of my sister Judy Smith talking about how Montana Women Vote got started?
Hi, Judy Smith. We're here to talk about Montana Women Vote. Can you tell me how Montana Women Vote got started? You and Terry Kendrick started it back in 2000. What prompted you to do that?
Well, Terry and I actually do reminisce about this, Janet. We were coming back from a particularly unfortunate experience at the legislature, and where we felt that the legislators just really weren't listening to us and that the issues that we represented really didn't have much traction. And large part of that was because the folks that make the decisions there really didn't think that who we represented would be able to really affect their getting reelected. And I think that's a large part of, for at least some legislators, why they do vote the way they do. And if a group isn't really there in the mix for them, then they're not going to make it a priority, and they're not going to certainly weigh it against other groups, especially when there's things like deficits or limited amounts of resources and time. And so we had over and over again had the experience that low-income issues, some of the women and family issues that we worked on, just really didn't get much of a support out of the legislature. And we started talking about, well, we better actually go back to ground one in the sense of registering and turning out these folks as voters and being able to talk to legislators then that we actually know that these folks are voters, they do care, you need to be accountable to them, and start building out these accountability mechanisms that hadn't really existed until that time. And I'm not saying that we're perfect at it, but it's something that we're working at more and more is how to show that these folks, particularly unlikely women voters, low-income women, women with kids, single women, young women, are out there voting and they care about particular issues. And if you want to get them to vote for you, then you need to address those issues. You need to support those issues in the legislature as well as when you're running as a candidate. So what we did is we convened a session of all the different women's organizations that we knew of that had been working on policy, and there were a fair number. And we said, bring with you the estimate of how many folks in your particular organization, whether it's volunteers or program participants or staff, actually are registered to vote. Because we had heard in the media and in some analysis that, you know, low-income folks and people in human services are less likely to vote. So we were thinking, okay, we'll see what we get. Well, we indeed did that calculation, and it turned out that of all of us, and there, as I say, there was a significant number of women's organizations, about 30%. And this isn't just program participants, this is staff and volunteers as well. About 30% were actually registered and voting. So we said, okay, well, this is part of the problem, that there is a real difference in whether or not certain sets of people are voting and that the issues they care about get attention or not. And so we had to get quickly expert at addressing how we actually get these folks that aren't voting now to actually participate and decide to vote. And that was what our first few years really were focused on, is, okay, how do we do this? How do we get people who aren't voting to actually engage and decide to vote? And it certainly wasn't just in Montana. I'm sure you probably know this, that nationwide.
Nationwide registration rates are about 30%. Yeah. And of those, not all of them vote. So
right. So it was a nationwide issue, and it was being flagged a number of places. And so we were part of that learning curve here in Montana and other places around the country. And I even remember now one of the first things I did is I went and started looking at all the websites of other groups that were working on this. I mean, thank heavens for the internet. Yeah. And there was some, there's a very interesting group in Georgia. And one of the things that they had found was that a lot of low-income women, when they asked them why they didn't vote, they would literally say the phrase, well, no one asked me to. And that was so interesting to a lot of us because you start reflecting on your own middle-class background. And voting was talked about in my family all the time. I was asked to participate in things all of the time. I would have been considered, you know, bad form if I wasn't going to get involved and vote. So to realize that a lot of people were raised in families where voting is not a part, and if anybody talks about it, they may talk negatively about it, and it's not something that's just considered something that you do as part of being a, you know, participant in society and making your issues and your voice heard. It's like, no, stay away from that. That's, you know, not something for you. That's not effective. You know, it's not going to work. So all of this negative messaging that a lot of folks experience in their own lives as they're growing up around voting, I just hadn't thought about that. So it was very interesting to me to hear that phrase, well, no one asked me to. So one of the first things we did as our, you know, strategy was to say, okay, that's going to change. If we do nothing else, we're going to ask low-income and unlikely women voters to vote, and we're going to tell them the reasons why it would make sense for them to vote. So that was our first strategy.
That was Judy Smith being interviewed by Janet Scott in May of 2008.
That was an amazing interview. Thanks for bringing that. I just want to tell everybody, Joan Richard just sat down at the table to join us.
Hi, everybody.
Tonight for our, in other words, final hurrah.
Well, and great to be here with you all. My Thanks. Heart is with you, and I've listened to this show since I've moved to Montana in 1982.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Our unbelievable engineer, Beth Ann, has gotten Terry on the phone, and so I think we're about ready to talk with her.
Terry, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Welcome.
Great. Good to be here.
Hi, Terry. It's Margaret.
Oh, hi, Margaret.
Nice to hear your voice.
Hi, yours Terry. Too. This is Lynn.
Hi, Lynn.
Hey, Terry. This is Bryony.
We're all here. Great. Thanks for joining us, Terry. This is Ann Zaldapetri, and I've been working with the show for about 2 years, and I am honored that you're here with us, and am wondering if you can tell us how you got involved in the show.
This is where Lynn and Margaret might also be able to help me out a little bit, that I was involved in the Women's Resource Center when I was in college in the late 70s and early 80s, and it started out as a feminist forum, and it didn't air regularly, you know, every week, but I think may have started out monthly. And then in the later 80s, I think Lynn and Rita DeAndrea picked it up again and drew Word and gave it the new name, In Other Words. Then it was on, I think, maybe monthly or twice a month. Lynn, am I right about that?
You know, Terry, I have that same problem in remembering how often it was on. I can't really recall exactly, but I know it became more frequent.
I think it started out monthly, then went to twice a month. You know, it was taped, and then remember we would put those big strands of tape around our neck as we were editing the show.
Oh, gosh, yes. It was amazing. Now, I don't even know how they do it now.
Yeah. So, Terry, this is Bryony. Your voice has been an important voice on Montana Public Radio for a long time. Your commentaries, I can't tell you how many times I've been in my car and listened to one of your commentaries and had to pull over because they've just been so riveting and amazing. And then I always email you the next day and say, please send me that because there's no way I can think and write like that. But anyway, I'd just be curious to hear from you what you think the loss is here and the importance that, In Other Words, has played over the years.
You know, Bryony, I've been thinking about that a lot, and I do feel it's a real loss, that it's good for women, you know, of all ages to sort of get used to working in the different aspects of media to make sure that their voice is heard. I really don't think we're living in a post-feminist age, you know, that there are so many issues that still need to be addressed. Good to have women's perspective on a range of the social and political issues of our time. I also really feel that KUFM as a community station, that it's going to be missing something by having a lot of the commentaries and the more sort of local community programming gone. So I'm disappointed that this outlet for people to be able to hear peers in their community talking about important issues and their perspective on important issues, that's going to be gone.
I don't know how we can call it community radio if we don't have the community producing the part of the radio.
Yeah. Well, I think that's one of the things that's very important here, is because it's different than news. You know, news is a third person reporting, and of course we always talk about, oh, we always want our reporters to be as objective as possible and report the facts, and we all know that objectivity is, there really isn't such a thing. Everybody comes with a little bit of bias, and of course reporters try very hard to be in the middle of the road and objective, and of course there's a role for that in news. But I think opinion shows are very important because, for example, with the commentaries, they represent, I think, a lot of the voices that we hear on this show as well. It's always good to hear an opposing point of view, even if you completely disagree with it. It's always important to hear that opposing point of view. And you cannot get the nuance and the essence of the truth of somebody's sort of picture of reality at that time when it's interpreted through a third person. So for me, that's one of the important roles of radio, and I think one of the things that In Other Words has done has been very important.
I really agree. In terms of the commentaries, I think that's really true, that it's good to have, and you're also really hearing from other Montanans. Again, you may totally disagree with their point of view, but they're telling the story and they're giving sort of maybe a fuller perspective of their point of view. In terms of a program like In Other Words, I mean, people can try to be unbiased, but we all have a frame of reference. And so news can be reported in a particular way and leave out a big chunk of the population, or leave out how a policy or something happened, how it actually affects a chunk of the population. And that's why I think, in other words, or shows from a feminist or whatever political perspective are real important, because it helps us not have to whitewash the scenario and really look deep into issues and the impact that they have on the community.
I feel like I really want to chime in there, because I feel like, too, news is becoming snippets just like everything mm-hmm. else. And when you have an entire hour to spend on a topic or with a person, you can get that depth and you can understand the issue from a lot of different angles versus just the 4-minute bite that it seems like our news is being broken up into now. So I think it's definitely a great loss to even change that format.
And even what is going to be reported on, so that the big news of the day be reported on, you know, and again, that's going to be from someone's perspective on what is the big news of the day. And there's so many other things that are happening that are important, and they don't really get talked about.
Don't you think having women's voices speaking for themselves is such a rare thing on the radio?
Yeah, I do. I've also been thinking about this, too. I mean, we are not in the same place that we were in the 1980s. Things have really changed for women. Things have gotten a lot better. There's a lot more peer relationships. I mean, KUFM had a woman news director for years, and still, I do think we need to have a feminist perspective.
Will you talk about some of the interviews that you did? I'm wanting to hear some of the memories of the early shows.
You know, one of my favorites was a woman named Helen Herbert. Lynn, do you remember her?
Yes.
You know, so she was a woman who was very active in Women for Peace. And by the time I met her, I think Helen was in her late 70s or early 80s, and did an interview with her. And it was so great to see someone who was really still very politically engaged in the community. And that was a really fun interview, and I admired her so much. And I remember doing another show that was just kind of silly, but it was on Can You Be a Feminist and Like Country Western Music?
I remember when you did that.
You know, that was just
That's
fun.
Great.
And,
what was the answer? What'd you come to?
Well, from my perspective, of course, it was yes. But but again, I was controlling the radio show. So see how you how you're biased and influence the outcome.
Didn't Eloise Cobell love Elvis?
Oh, great.
Yes, she did.
That's really awesome. It was also really great to get that international news from Wings and hear things that really you didn't have access to if we hadn't had that news service, Women's International News Gathering Service.
Yeah. Well, I was very pleased to hear at our last meeting that the Mansfield Library is interested in archiving some of the work that we've done, because I do think that some of the interviews over the years have a very important historical record. So I'm glad to hear that that's happening. Oh, and we have our honorary man who's just joined us, John Myers.
I'm a real man.
He's a real man. One of our honorary men.
One of our honorary men.
I am honored to be in your presence.
Well, thanks, John. You've always been such an incredible supporter of, in other words.
I love this show. There's so much variety, and it's all high quality, you know, the music and the stories and the politics, and it's just a great mix of radio, and I love the way you do it, and all the different producers have their own styles, and they're all good. I've been answering the phone, and we got some good calls, some positive calls from men. Steve Smith, who's a school bus driver, loves Aww. In Other Words, and is very disappointed that it's going away.
Thanks, Steve.
And Doug Grimm, who's a potter who donates a lot of things to us for fundraising premiums, and has been a supporter of the station even longer than I've been here, which is over 30 years.
Thanks, Doug.
Thanks, Doug.
Mm-hmm. He likes the show very much, sad to see it go. And he had a question. He said, did In Other Words start around some specific issue in particular, or was something happening at the very first days of In Other Words?
Well, since I wasn't the person who started In Other Words, it was Rita DeAndrea, and she no longer lives here. And that was so long ago, I don't exactly remember. It was more a continuity with Feminist Forum and the need to have these perspectives and issues on the air. My sense of it is continuity, not letting it go.
Well, we've been getting a lot of positive phone calls, so.
Well, thanks, John.
And, thank you. You know, I've always loved the show. It's been an honor to be up here when you guys are doing the show. I get to listen and sometimes press some buttons.
Well, one of the things.
Sometimes the wrong ones.
Well, one of the things I'll always remember about you, John, and helping out with the shows is I know I'd be doing some completely obtuse subject, and I'd go to John and say, so, John, do you think you could find any music that would go with this subject? And he'd always find something. You know, it's just your knowledge of music is just amazing. And so thank you for all your help all these years.
I like being challenged.
We have loved you and Joan and Beth Ann, especially for all of your help and support.
We've got a great group up here.
We've got a party going on here.
That's really...
There's Terry.
I think one of the amazing things about In Other Words is just the number of people that have worked on the show and people that have been committed to it for so many years. And so Missoula owes you all a real debt of gratitude. It's been a great show, and thanks for all you've done.
And you.
And you, Terry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I understand, Bryony, was it you that brought Helen Caldicott?
Yes.
To Missoula? What was that like? How did you do that?
Oh, well, you know, Helen Caldicott was one of my absolute all-time heroines. We just sort of reached out as Women's Voices for the Earth to see if she'd come to Missoula and give a talk. And I couldn't believe that she said yes. And I remember driving to the airport to pick her up, and I was really nervous. And she just got in the car, and she was just the most down-to-earth person. And I think that was one of the other things about interviewing all these amazing people is that you'd be really nervous up front. And then you just find out they're all just regular people like the rest of us, but just have had a particular experience in their life and something amazing to share. And so that was really fun to be able to interview people like that. And Amy and I were just talking about it earlier that I think that's another role that In Other Words had, is that In Other Words covered a lot of environmental issues in detail that you just don't hear on the radio. I mean, we don't really have Living on Earth. I don't very rarely hear that anymore. And so I think that's another big loss, is the sort of the in-depth stories that we hear of environmental stuff. And Amy, you've been really good about doing stuff on climate change.
It's funny because we got comments from some men listeners, and John is here, and I did a few shows with Beth, and I was like, but could I interview a guy? And then they're like, sure. And I actually was able to get Bill McKibben on, and it was one of those things too, a little, you know, heart flutter. And I was like, got him on the radio, and he talked to me because I was on the radio, and so I was somebody, even though I wasn't really anybody. But it's been really fun to be able to cover those issues, and as you talk about, kind of dive in and really figure out what motivates people to work on them. I also think it's been fun lately. I mean, we talked about all those archives, and it would be great if we could get those and pull them out and maybe even put them on the website that we have, where we have a lot of podcasts from the last couple years anyway, and In Other Words Radio.com, so that people can listen to them. And it would be neat to be able to get some of those old interviews up and put them on so that we have them.
We actually excerpted tonight some snippets, if we get around to it, of an interview between Judy Smith and Sarah Weddington, the attorney who argued Roe v. Wade. I was thinking, you know, it's a great interview, and I was thinking we should put it up on the website, which is, in other words, radio.com, right?
And that's right.
Yeah, because, you know, there's just excerpts, but it's just fascinating women's history, basically, to hear Sarah Weddington talk about the experience of that, what brought them to bring the suit, and then actually arguing it, and Judy's role in that. You know, who knew that there was a Montana hand in that? I mean, at the time, a Texas hand, but yeah.
Hey, you guys, before we get to that, I think Beth Ann has an announcement.
Well, just first of all, to listeners, so that you'll know, this is In Other Words, which you hear Well, up to and including tonight, at this time, every Tuesday evening, this is the last In Other Words broadcast that you will hear, at least on this bunch of stations. And the whole gang is here. And the whole gang who are here, it turns out Christine Kaufman is on the phone to join you. Hello, Christine.
Hi. It's really good to be on.
Hi, Christine.
Hi, Bryony.
You know, one of the things we'd love to hear a little bit about is your role in Other Words and the importance that you think In Other Words has had over the years.
Well, you know, I've been searching my memory a little bit for, have you established how long ago? It seems like it was 30 years ago when I was doing it. Is that about right?
That's what all our rusty brains in here have been.
Collective memory.
Yeah.
So I know I was a graduate student in environmental studies, and I was kind of doing a blended master's degree to sort of women's studies, environmental studies, and Judy Smith, I heard talking about her, was certainly instrumental in my years there at the University of Montana, and I worked with Rita D'Andrea, who may have started the show, if I recall correctly, and mm-hmm. I was a student, and it was sort of a project for one of my classes. I just got so interested, involved. It seemed so important to me to have women's voices being heard, being brought forward. You know, I can sort of remember those early years. We would find different news services that women were putting on, and 30 years ago, there just weren't that many of them. It was really a fun exploration for me.
Thanks, Christine. And your role was, of course, really important, and you've gone on to do great things. You've spent many, many years with the Montana Human Rights Network, and you've now been a legislator for, I don't know, how many years?
It's going on 14, I guess.
Okay.
Wow.
You know, I think in all of those roles, it's been important to me to ensure that women's leadership is brought forward and that women's voices are heard. And In Other Words, with such a sort of a concrete, I mean, it was women's voices, and that's what it was about. It was really fun to be a part of that. I think I was involved for several years. Again, my memory's a little hazy around all of that, but truly a privilege to have been part of something that then lasted so long, I had no idea it would.
So do we want to go ahead and listen to the clip with Judy Smith and Sarah Weddington? I think
that would be
fantastic. Mm-hmm.
To me, the context growing up in West Texas, which on the one hand was very good. It's a land of ranches and farms and very agricultural, but you grew up being very independent. And yet, what you were often told was women don't, women can't, women shouldn't. And so on the one hand, there was this expansive nature to where you were raised. And on the other hand, there was this closed nature. I had gotten my English and speech secondary education degree, but when we were in those education classes, they said, now, if you get pregnant as a public school teacher, you'll have to quit. Women are not allowed to be pregnant in the classroom. And the ethical issue we had to discuss was whether or not you had an ethical responsibility to tell the principal as soon as you got pregnant, or whether you could wait till the principal figured it out. Or I had played basketball. A lot of young mm-hmm. women in Texas played basketball, but we were limited to half court and two dribbles. After two mm-hmm. dribbles, it was a mm-hmm. traveling, a technical violation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And now we know that was all just silly. Mm-hmm. I had then thought I was going to teach the eighth grade. I was going to teach eighth graders to love Beowulf. And I tried, and I thought, I better go to graduate school. And so I decided I want to go to law school, said to the dean of my college, I want to go to law school. And he said, but you can't. And I said, why not? I have very good grades. And he said, no woman from Matt Murray in Abilene, Texas, has ever gone to law school. It would be too tough.
Oh my.
So you know the moment mm-hmm. that I decided I was going to law mm-hmm. school. Now, when I got to law school, there were five women in my entering class of 1965, June of 1965. And I look now, and of course, there are 51-52% women in most law schools today. But at that time, there were some professors that didn't call on women. There were some professors who almost felt insulted to have women in their class, that they were wasting their effort. But on the other hand, and most women who graduated from law school didn't get good jobs, mm-hmm. certainly not jobs with law firms. And so I ended up working for a law professor because I didn't get a job with a law firm. And it was while I was working for that law professor that I began to be tied in, had met you and B and mm-hmm. others who are now in Montana. Mm-hmm. And so as I remember the conversation, we really talked about women in a very wide context, and that women were limited unfairly sometimes by attitude, and that we had to work on attitudes, that sometimes it was laws, that we needed to pass laws, like we passed the Equal Credit Bill that said women did not have to get a husband or father's signature in order to get credit. We changed the anti-rape statutes. There were a lot of laws we were working on, and then there were laws we were trying to overturn, either through the legislature, like the statute in Texas that said no woman may have an abortion unless it is necessary to save her life. And nobody knew what that meant. Doctors would not do abortions based on that language. And so we were trying to change laws, and then we decided to go the court route as we had more women willing. But I guess I look back, that period in some ways was difficult because there were such battles to be fought. But on the other hand, you knew what they were. Mm-hmm. And I think today sometimes the battles are much more subtle mm-hmm. and much harder to get people animated about trying to work on them. So my memory is of a day when you and B, Durden Vogel, said essentially, we've got trouble and we need help. Mm-hmm. And I said, what? And you all described all that you were doing to try to first tell people about birth control, because at the University of Texas Health Center at that time, and the university had about 50,000 students, mm-hmm. big university, the health center at that time had a policy, 69, that said no woman could have access to birth control unless she certified that she was within 6 weeks of marriage, because she needed to take the birth control pill before she got married to be protected on her wedding night. And you said, but while we're trying to tell people how to prevent pregnancy, and I can still remember that somebody, I don't know who it was, had a sort of small newsprint copy of the first Our Bodies Ourselves.
Right, we did, yeah.
Yeah, which was, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. it was like everybody shared it with everybody
right,
else.
Right, passed hand to hand.
And now you look at Our Body Ourselves, mm-hmm. it's about mm-hmm. 3 inches mm-hmm. thick.
Right.
But it was like people were trying to share information mm-hmm. with each other. And then you all said, we want to tell women where the good places are to go for abortion and keep them out of the bad places. Can we do that, or would we be prosecuted as accomplices? And you might remember more of what it was like to do that mm-hmm. counseling.
Mm-hmm. As you were talking, I was having that flashback, because one of the things I most remember is lying in bed at night and a phone ringing and turning and picking up the phone, and it's a woman's voice. And we had set it up that way so that people didn't know us, we didn't know them, mm-hmm. but they had a way to reach us. And then we would arrange to call them back, usually on a pay phone. And we had some very interesting situations. We actually drove some of the women down to Mexico. In some cases, we had a deal worked out with a doctor in San Antonio where we'd do certain kinds of things. I mean, we had a whole array of things, but it pretty much relied on several of us being willing to absolutely go out on a limb of many kinds. And the motivation, though, was so incredible, because one woman I really remember very well was a young African-American woman who was going to graduate. And again, you can appreciate this being from where you're from, and where, you know, at that time, young African-American women moving out, graduating from college, getting ahead, you know, that was a big deal. And here she was pregnant. She didn't want to be. So one of the things we did is we had to give her a urine sample, so she wouldn't test pregnant to do something else. I mean, we were into anything, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever we could do, we would be doing it.
Yeah.
And I think that also is what's a little bit different now and then, uh-huh. is that it was that sense of, okay, it's so important, we will do whatever it takes. And there were very concrete things. You know, if you drove people here, or you made a deal over here, or you provided what they needed, because you could just see that result. And it made Absolutely. Someone's life just totally different.
Well, and now we know that some of the women in the group did have FBI mm-hmm. files. Mm-hmm. The FBI was actually following mm-hmm. some of the women. And I'll never forget, one of the women got her FBI files not too long ago. And, of course, a lot of it's all blacked out. But one fly says she does not shave under her arms and she has hairy legs.
Right.
As if this was a big deal.
Right. This is bulleted information.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I
so
mean,
it was a time that lots of people became involved. And I look back and there were some people contributed skills of all kinds. And some it was theatrical skills and some it was songwriting skills and some it was legal skills and advocacy skills. And so, as I remember, you and I and Jim Wheelis and my friend Ron Weddington were sitting in the law school one day because Jim and Ron were both in law school together. And we were talking about the possibility of, based on the legal research we were doing and what we were finding, what would be the next step. Now, it was during that time when I was beginning to research the cases pending around the nation, and there were lots of them. I mean, first we found the Griswold case, Griswold versus Connecticut, 1965. And that was a case where Connecticut had made the use of birth control a criminal offense. And eventually, the woman who was head of the New Haven Planned Parenthood had, with a doctor, Lee Buxton, given a married couple a contraceptive device, and they had been arrested, prosecuted, and convicted of being accomplices to the use of a contraceptive device. So we found that, and it sounded like when the court had talked about a right of privacy to decide whether to bear or begat a child, that maybe that was language that we could use in a lawsuit as a springboard. Or there were cases pending in New York, New Jersey, you know, sort of scattered around the country. And we knew that the Supreme Court often accepted a case if there were lots of cases pending on the same issue. So we thought, well, if we filed a lawsuit, that would kind of help get this beginning mountain of litigation up to the Supreme Court. And so I think one of the other things of that period is it was not that everything happening nationally was coordinated by any means, but it's like one group in one state would hear about what people in other states were doing. And so there was kind of a very loose network of people saying, okay, send me a copy of the petition you used. I may want to use the same. A lot of research, a lot of thought going into it.
That was an interview that Janet Scott produced with Judy Smith and Sarah Weddington, the attorney for Roe v. Wade, and that was in 2002.
And I think that piece is a perfect example of the kinds of shows that In Other Words produced and how incredibly important they are in terms of women's history. So
all those great details.
Yeah.
Well, it's important, too, not to forget that that wasn't that long ago. Beth Ann and I were talking about, she and I are the same age, graduated from high school in 1983. And when I was in high school in the late 70s, when I started high school, 79, I was encouraged to go through the secretarial track. And that wasn't that long ago that those limits were in place. And thank God my daughter has never heard of such a thing. But still, those details, we need to keep replaying them. We need to keep remembering that that's how that was, because we can never slide back.
Yeah. Never slide back. And also, it's important to think about the contemporary political challenges that we have, and that sometimes it feels like you're up against a mountain, but you can look back in history and look at these kinds of struggles that women have had and know that change does come about and we have to just persevere.
I was going to say a similar thing, Brian, is listening to Judy Smith's voice, it really reminded me that Judy really never did take no for an answer. And so it's sort of like, if a door closes, then she looked for an avenue through some other means. So if people are interested in having, in other words, through another format or whatever, I'd certainly be interested in talking to people about that. I don't know what the venue would be, but there certainly could be something.
Well, your segue is perfect timing, Terry, because we've been talking about what's next. I think we all feel very strongly that this is not something that we want to let go of. So we're tossing around a lot of ideas, from finding a new home for the show, perhaps on another radio station, or at least in the interim, doing podcasts on our own website. And then we've also discussed the idea of potentially creating a whole national women's radio show via the internet. And we know that that is probably not something that we can do as a volunteer effort, but I think it's an important one. And I think, personally, I think it's something that we should pursue.
It would be fun.
It would be really fun. Really fun. And we would never have to worry about what we were saying.
That's right.
We'd be no sensitive. Not that I have to say that Montana Public Radio has been fantastic in terms of allowing us to be able to do a lot of controversial issues. There's never been any censorship here, and that's been a great thing.
Yeah.
We've been able to put our shows together and learn our skills and get better and better. It's just a totally different kind of programming than professionally available programming through the national media. You know, it's just entirely different.
Mm-hmm. Now, Beth, I know you had some other people you wanted to thank, right?
Well, there's been so many people who have worked on In Other Words, and it's hard to remember everybody. So if you think of people, chime in. But I did think of some folks. Amy Sillenberg just went out the door, by the way, after a long, long day of travel for the work that she does so passionately for Montana Audubon and working on climate change. So thank you to Amy. The current crew of In Other Words has included Lacey Roberts, a talented radio producer, Allison Mills, Annie Heiser did some work with us. There were many people who were guest interviewers and producers and brought a wonderful variety of view and voice to the show. Janet Scott, we have mentioned. Annie Gard actually started our music edition of In Other Words, which was once a month, long ago, back at the beginning of In Other Words. Ann Benninger was another music producer. Erin Cork, who sent her shows in from Alaska. She sent them down from Alaska. Maren Christensen was the music person for a long time. Jen Ewell contributed shows for a while, now the Montana Women's Foundation executive director. I would love to thank Ann Zalda Petrie for jumping in when she did and bringing such joy and fun and organization and being such an amazing person in all that she does. So thank you to Ann for coordinating, for taking this on, and her buddy Clark Grant, now in Butte, who was another of our token males, but more than token. Margaret McCourt here next to me, who just was about to start learning radio with us more intensively when we got our bad news. I want to thank Susan Malaris, who every fundraising year would call in her support for In Other Words. That was always just a joy. And Jane Ragsdale also worked with us for years. So those are some of the folks that I can think of, and I know they're not all of them.
Can we also say thanks to you, Beth?
Margaret's mom also volunteered when it was the Feminist Forum. Susan knows.
Yeah, a long, long, long time ago.
I heard that, Anne, and thank you very much.
Yeah, I didn't want to interrupt the phone, but yeah, thanks for being so inclusive and for guiding so many of us through this process. Beth, you made all the difference for me.
Well, it's been really great, and I just really was always hoping to inspire and support listeners, because I do feel as women that who I read or listened to always inspired me. So I was hoping that I could do a little bit of that in return.
So we've got a Joan Baez record queued up.
Lynn and I were at the Joan Baez concert. I don't know if any of the rest of you were there, but I got quite teary during her concert. You did too. Because she's just so amazing. And she talked about some of the marches that she was in, and she's just such an amazing woman and was such an incredibly important voice for social change and peace. And I just thought it was very apropos that she happened to be having her concert in Missoula tonight. And so, yeah, I got quite choked up.
We've had another caller who is hoping to maybe either join the conversation or to talk with us. So if you guys don't mind hanging a little bit longer, we might be able to accomplish that. Just wanted to let you know we've had lots of callers calling in and supporting the show and saying that they will very much miss having it on the air.
Thanks, Joan.
Thanks, Joan.
Come on, take warning how you court young men. They're like a star of us.
The wonderful Joan Baez. This is In Other Words. Folks, do you want to reintroduce yourselves? Who have we got here? Who's on mic?
Who's still standing?
Beth Judy.
Margaret McCourt.
Bryony Schwann.
And Lynn Smith.
I'm Joan Richard.
And I'm Anzalda Petrie. And Beth Ann Austin is running the board, which I'm going to really miss, that board.
Shout out for the board.
Shout out to the board. And we have a caller who wishes to speak. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
How are you?
Well, I'm fine. Well, I'm not fine. I don't know why I say I'm fine. I tuned in tonight to hear what has become one of my favorite programs on KUFM, and right away I find out that tonight is the end of it. I am deeply upset about it, upset enough to where I called John and asked if I could be patched in here somehow so I could say a few things.
Thank you, Steve.
Yes.
I used to occasionally listen to this program, In Other Words, several years ago, and every time I listened to it, I'd say, wait a minute, this is really interesting. So the next week I'd listen, and I'd listen. And now I have gotten to the point over about the past 2 years, I do not miss this show. As I told John, I'm a school bus driver. I usually have to be up about 5 in the morning to go do my job, and I don't care if I have to stay up till midnight to hear this show, because you always have something very interesting and compelling and worthwhile on, and I cannot believe that it's being taken off the air. It's outrageous. An example, I don't know how long ago it was, you had a lady named Gail Gucci on, who at that time was with the PSC. It might have been Beth Judy who interviewed her. I don't recall. Anyway, over that hour, she explained the workings of the PSC, Public Service Commission, like better than I've ever heard it explained. It was an absolutely wonderful show. Here, a month or so ago, you had Amanda Curtis on. I listened to that. The environmental shows, different scientists, environmentalists that have been on. I'm just lying here tonight. I'm thinking, where are we going to hear this? This sort of thing. It seems, as I'm listening here tonight, it seems like all you wonderful women who are involved with this show, every one of you, you're taking it so cheerfully. And I'm lying here thinking, when I get off my school bus tomorrow, I'm going to be out there in the office, and I'm going to find out just what the hell is going on here. It's outrageous. I mean it. I'm not kidding.
Thank you, Steve.
Yes,
thank you so much.
Well, thanks, Steve. And just so you know, we're not taking it cheerfully.
I know you're not. You couldn't possibly.
Yeah, it's rough.
Well, I hope that I'm not going to take up the whole rest of your show here or anything, but I hope that there's a whole lot of people out here, or out here and listening, who are thinking about doing the same thing and storming the office tomorrow. I'm serious, and finding out, I don't know who's making these changes. These commentaries that have been on in the afternoon with the veteran show, Dan Gallagher.
Oh, yeah. Jordan's Viewpoint.
All of them, all the commentaries. When I first heard they're going off the radio, I thought, wait a minute. What about the listeners? What about the people who help keep this operation going by opening up their wallets? Do we have any say in this? I have never been able to be a big donor, but I've been listening to public radio back since the days of Phil Hess.
And, wow, that's a long time.
Yeah, and I feel all of a sudden, now, just, what's going on out here? What's going on?
Those are good questions, Steve.
Yes.
Well, I'm going to find out, and I hope that you gals, I hope you fight back, because this show should stay on the radio. And now I'll get off and listen some more.
Thank you so much,
Steve. Thank you.
God bless all of you, and find a way to overturn this decision, please.
Thanks so much.
Good night.
Bye. Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
I remember when I was a little girl, our house caught on fire. I'll never forget the look on my father's face as he gathered me up in his arms and raced to the burning building out on the pavement. And I stood there, shivering in my pajamas, and watched the whole world go up in flames. And when it was all over, I said to myself, is that all there is to a fire? Is that all there is? Is that all there is? If that's all there is, my friends, then let's keep dancing. Let's break out the booze and have a ball. If that's all. And when I was 12 years old, my daddy took me to the circus, the greatest show on earth. There were clowns and elephants and dancing bears, and a beautiful lady in pink tights flew high above our heads. And as I sat there watching, I had had the feeling that something was missing. I don't know what, but when it was all over, I said to myself, is that all there is to the circus? Is that all there is? Is that all there is? If that's all there is, my friends, then let's keep dancing. Let's break out the booze and have a ball. If that's all. And then I fell in love with the most wonderful boy in the world. We'd take long walks down by the river, or just sit for hours gazing into each other's eyes. We were so very much in love. And then one day, he went away, and I thought I'd die, but I didn't. And when I didn't, I said to myself, is that all there is to love? Is that all there is? Is that all there is? If that's all there is, my friends, then let's keep... I know what you must be saying to yourselves. If that's the way she feels about it, why doesn't she just end it all? Oh no, not me. I'm not ready for that final disappointment, because I know, just as well as I'm standing here talking to you, that when that final moment comes and I'm breathing my last breath, I'll be saying to myself, is that all there is? Is that all there is? If that's all there is, break out the booze and have a ball. If that's all there is.
Do we want to go off the air to Joan Baez?
I think that sounds great.
So. That sounds great.
No, I just want to close by saying thanks to all of you for your amazing work over the years and to all the listeners. I've always been amazed at the comments that I've gotten all around the state. I mean, even from places like Virginia City, who listen in to Montana Public Radio and have supported the show over all the years. Thank you so much for all your feedback and support.
It's been a privilege to be part of your lives. Mm-hmm.
So, for In Other Words, good night.
Seems like only yesterday I left my mind behind. Down in the gypsy cafe with a friend of mine. Who sat with baby heavy on her yet spoke of life most free from slavery, with eyes that showed no trace of misery. The phrase in connection first with she, occurred, that love is just a four-letter word. Limited and underfed. You were talking while I hid to the one who was the father of your kid. You probably didn't think I did, but I heard you say that love is just a four-letter. Thank you. must have thought that there was nothing more absurd than that love is just a four-letter word. Though I never knew just what you meant when you were speaking to your man, I could only think in terms of me, and now I understand. After waking enough times to think I see the holy kiss that's supposed to last eternity. Blow up in smoke, it's destiny. It falls on strangers, travels free. Yes, I know now traps are only set by me. I do not really need to be assured that love is just a four-letter word. Strange it is to be beside you many years, the tables turned. You'd probably not believe me if I told you all I've learned. It is very, very weird indeed to hear words like forever fleets of ships run through my mind. I cannot cheat. It's like looking in a teacher's face complete. I can say nothing to you but repeat what I